for argument, United States v. Block. Mr. McGowan.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Andrew McGowan. I'm with the Federal Defenders for the Central District of Illinois, and I represent one of the appellants in this case, Mr. Kenneth Block. I will be addressing the main joint argument for all of the appellants, as well as any questions the court may have on the harmless error. We appeal the district court's determination that the conspiracy sold 700 grams of heroin a week for 2 years. This was higher by at least two or three times from what everybody else said the conspiracy sold. In fact, it was almost three times higher.
Could you speak a little louder and more slowly?
Surely, Your Honor. In fact, it was almost two or three times more than the average that we calculated of about 250 grams a week based on all but the highest and lowest estimates of how much heroin was sold.
And your position is that the judge chose the highest version of the drug quantity from the available evidence rather than a conservative estimate. I mean, that's really your bottom line.
It is.
But didn't Daniel's girlfriend say that 100 to 200 grams of raw heroin were purchased every week? And wouldn't that make the trial court's 100-gram estimate conservative by comparison?
I suppose you could look at it that way. However, I would also add that the other statements about the runs, there was another person who said it was like 200 or 300 grams.
Got to speak more slowly and loudly.
Okay? I apologize, Your Honor.
You're mumbling.
I don't intend to. I'm sorry.
Okay.
In any event, the calculations of the runs were very disparate. I mean, they were really disparate. And the girlfriend, of course, had lied to the agents in her first attempt to cooperate. Now, the agent thought that she was being truthful, but, of course, at Daniel's sentencing, she didn't even testify. She took the fifth. So there are some real doubts about her basis of knowledge, even though she was his girlfriend. She didn't sell any of it. She didn't package it, from what I understand. So while that is something that may support the district court's finding, it's only one thing of, in comparison to a large bulk of information that is against that finding.
Well, what about Gregory and Page's statement? Don't they help corroborate the quantity of raw heroin purchased?
Gregory is a run statement, right? And also, I believe Gregory is Jamel Gregory. In our brief, we believe that he's only responsible. He only said that the conspiracy sold 35 to 50 grams a week. Now, the district court came to a different conclusion doing a different analysis. But we believe the district court's analysis of that was incorrect. And Cage, did you say?
I said Page.
Page.
I could have the name wrong, but I thought that was another co-conspirator.
There's a Davis, a Calvin Davis. His was a money testimony. I'm afraid I'm not familiar.
Why would Daniels have exaggerated the amount of drugs they were trading?
Your Honor, at the time Daniels made that statement, he was trying to get the police to release him. He was telling them he was a bigger dealer than he was. In my opinion, he was puffing.
Why did they get them to release him? Had the opposite effect. I don't understand.
The police want to know what kind of information you have, who you have it against, and what you can do for them when they're thinking about releasing you. And when I may say releasing, he thought that they were going to let him go to cooperate. The agent's testimony was, no, we weren't going to let him go, but we were going to let him go in a car under our supervision to conduct a sale. Now, in any event, at that point, he's puffing. He's saying, look, I'm a big dealer. I know a lot of people. I can help you in a lot of different cases. If he were to say, oh, I don't know what you're talking about.
No, he could say he knows a lot of deal. He knows a lot of he knows a lot of people, but he doesn't have to exaggerate the amount of trading he does.
Well, from all the evidence,
since the mere fact, if you cooperate, you're likely to get a sentencing break. But that doesn't mean you're not going to get a sentence at all. And if you've told them about this huge quantity, you're going to have a higher sentence.
I think it's clear he even admitted he was not looking at the sentencing in this case. He was not considering the consequences of what he was saying, other than he wanted to be released. He wanted to get in that car and he wanted to get away. That's what he said, and I think that's pretty accurate.
I found this Gregory, because Gregory said he obtained, this was his grand jury testimony, that he obtained between 50 and 200 grams of raw heroin from Chicago in five separate trips.
Again, it's a broad, disparate amount. And while part of that would support the district court's finding, some of it would not. And that's part of the evidence. I understand that. However, when the district court ruled on the amount, he was only relying on the girlfriend's testimony and Daniel's statement, his understanding of that statement anyway, which in later hearings became something along the lines of, well, he never denied that he made these statements. But in fact, he did deny that he made them, some of them. He didn't deny that he made the statement that he could take 100 grams of pure heroin and turn it into 700 grams. But he did deny that he did it for every week, and he did deny that he did it for the last year, that he said that he did it for the last year. So to the extent that the district court relied on the district court's understanding of what Mr. Daniels said, that would have been incorrect.
And can you discuss this analysis that has to do with breaking down the grams into the 700 grams into 2.5 grams and what the sales would have had to be in order to support that?
Your Honor, our understanding of that is that the way this conspiracy sold the grams was in .10 amounts. Which is so 1 gram, 1.10 grams was $10. And, you know, you're selling to each individual person. So the point is, and this goes to the number of runners that were available. The vast majority of the evidence was that there was only 2 to 3 runners. There was one bit of information that there might have been 6 or 8, but it wasn't specified.
That was from Agent Ivan Shich. Who thought it was between 4 to 6 runners?
That was in Townsend's testimony. Before that, he said it was up to 4, but usually 2 to 3 in 2 other sentencing hearings. The idea is that there aren't enough hours in the day for 2 to 3 people or even 4, and even 6 to 8. Our analysis includes 6 to 8 to sell that many small amounts of heroin to sell 700 grams a week.
They don't sell just one to one person, right?
I believe most of the sales are that one little .10 to a person. That's
what often people buy more than one dose at a time.
Maybe 2 or 3, but I mean ultimately the
what's the evidence about the amount, average number of doses that the consumers buy?
I believe it's $1 $10 hit.
Is there evidence about this, the average number of doses that the consumer buys?
It would be in the statements.
Pardon?
It would be in the statements, but I don't remember a particular statement saying that.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. McGowan. Mr. Mohammed?
And good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Amir Mohammed. I'm standing in today for Hanif Omar, who represents John Knox. John Knox and Samuel Peoples have a common argument, and they assert in this appeal that plain error was committed during sentencing. The government's response is that the issue is precluded on appeal due to waiver. We disagree. As this Court has stated in Jaime, waiver principles should be construed liberally in favor of the defendant, and that waiver requires an intentional relinquishment of a known right. In Mr. Knox's case, the plea agreement specifically reserved his right to appeal the sentence, which is based on the drug quantity calculation, as Mr. McGowan further elaborated on. Mr. Knox's district court attorney, Mr. Ryan, also filed a letter with Judge Capalla highlighting the disparity between the sentence proposed in the plea agreement and the one in the PSR. And while Mr. Knox and Mr. Peoples may not have explicitly, verbally objected to the PSR's calculations at sentencing, this court stated in Jaime that a lawyer's statement at sentencing that a defendant does not object to anything in the PSR does not inevitably constitute a waiver of the defendant's right to challenge on appeal any guideline calculation included in that report, and also that we, being the court...
Is the government wrong when it says that Knox specifically acknowledged that he wasn't challenging the drug quantity?
Can you repeat the question, Your Honor? I couldn't hear you.
Pardon?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Is the government wrong when it says in its brief that Knox specifically acknowledged that he wasn't challenging the drug quantity?
I believe the government is accurate. I think at sentencing, Judge Coppola asked...
Why isn't that a waiver?
We don't believe it is a waiver.
Well, if he says he's not challenging the drug quantity, why isn't that a waiver? What more is required for a waiver?
Well, because prior to sentencing, Mr. Ryan recorded a document on the PACER document file.
If he says at sentencing he's not challenging the drug quantity, why isn't that a waiver?
Well, because in the letter he filed with the court, he indicated his concern with the disparity, and to the extent that there's an ambiguity pursuant to Jaime.
I don't understand you. Was this letter after the sentencing, during the sentencing?
I understand it was before, Your Honor.
Well, but if at the sentencing he says that he's not challenging the drug quantity, why isn't that the waiver? What does it matter what he said earlier?
Well, and I'm relying on this court's Jaime opinion and saying there's an ambiguity created between...
What is the ambiguity?
On the one hand, he's saying there is a challenge. On the other
hand... No, he's not saying that. He said it, and before he said he disagreed with the quantity. When it comes to sentencing, he says, no, I'm not challenging it. So what's the judge supposed to do?
Well, and I agree.
What's he supposed to do? You're not challenging it, but I'm going to pretend you're challenging it in case you argue on appeal that you're challenging it. Is that what you want?
No, Your Honor, because if we go back to the argument Mr. McCowan was making, I think the court did have a greater duty than just what Mr. Ryan may have said to substantially inquire.
If a defendant says, I'm not challenging, his lawyer says, we're not challenging X, Y, or Z, that's a waiver.
In light of, and I understand Your Honor's point, but in light of Jaime, even if a lawyer says we don't challenge it, it might not be a waiver in light of this court's decision.
I understand that. How can it not be a waiver if he says he's not challenging it?
Because inevitably, not every statement that a defendant's lawyer makes saying we don't challenge is not waiver pursuant to this court. This court has found that to be the case.
Well, tell me why not.
To ensure that the principles of fairness are properly put into place and implemented.
So my understanding is that Knox and People both filed explicit statements on the records that they accepted the 700 grams per week quantity. That's true, right?
Well, Mr. Knox, yes. Well, Mr. Knox, yes. Mr. Peoples, I'm not certain. That's a factual question, but his attorney is going to speak after me if you care to address that question to him.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mohammed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Sullivan?
May it please the court. I represent Samuel Peoples. I represented him for the plea in the district court below and here on appeal. Judge, the primary issue as to Mr. Peoples is not so much the drug quantity. I'm not sure how much it changes his guideline calculation. The primary issue with respect to Mr. Peoples is the firearms enhancement. We believe, and we have argued in our brief and our reply brief, that Judge Coppola failed to take the initial step of determining the scope of Mr. Peoples' relevant conduct. As Judge Cudahy highlighted in his opinion in Fox, this case in particular was a 27-month conspiracy. For 14 weeks of that, interspersed in the middle, Mr. Peoples was part of the conspiracy. Now, Judge Coppola, in terms of finding a firearms enhancement, picked from all over, and it isn't clear when these events occurred, picked while Mr. Gregory was found with a firearm, and we found Mr. Knox with a firearm, and Mr. Daniels said he'd give a firearm to everyone who wanted one. I specifically tried at sentencing to nail down those instances which specifically applied to Peoples. There were only three, I believe. One was in October of, I think it was 2008, Mr. People said Clay got into his car or was about to get in his car and got arrested. And either he had a gun or he had threatened to use a gun on his girlfriend in a domestic dispute. No indication that possession of the gun or use of the gun was related to the narcotics conspiracy. The second one, I believe about 3 weeks before Mr. Peoples got arrested, another defendant was caught with a gun, and he was, I'm not clear, he's a core defendant.
Are there any drug conspiracies which don't involve guns?
Judge, if you want to make that presumption, then I suggest we get rid of the guideline enhancement and just say, hey, let's raise everybody's offense level by two. Yes, I think there are.
You're not answering my question.
I think there are, yes. I think Mr. Peoples didn't want to be around a gun. Mr. Peoples was shot.
It doesn't matter what he wants to be around. The question is what he foresaw.
Not strictly, Judge.
Whether there are drug conspiracies of this scale in which no one carries a gun or has access to a gun to protect himself because he's handling this very valuable product and cannot ask for police protection.
Judge, there is scant evidence. I don't have an empirical study.
You're not answering my question.
Judge, have you ever
represented?
Yes, I have, Judge.
Conspirators where there were no guns involved?
Yes, I have. And I don't have an empirical study as to cases where guns are not involved and where guns are involved. The government acknowledges that as to some defendants in this case, I believe it's a footnote in their brief, Defendant Smith, they didn't give a gun enhancement to. Well, if by your reasoning a gun is foreseeable to every person in the conspiracy, then Mr. Smith should have gotten one.
Well, didn't Peoples carry a firearm in connection with a prior 2003 conviction for extortion of drugs and money from a drug dealer?
Yes, very clearly he did. He was shot by the FBI when they tried to arrest him. And I contend that goes to part of the issue here. Mr. Peoples, when Mr. Clay was getting into his car and got arrested, either with a gun or having threatened somebody with a gun, Mr. Peoples got out of the conspiracy, said he didn't want to be around Clay, and that's one of the breaks in Mr. Peoples' participation period. Mr. Peoples then got in strictly as a runner around Christmas, and then the only other significant evidence against him is that he saw a rifle at Mr. Daniel's house, not the place where they were cutting drugs or packaging drugs. That was another location Mr. Daniels had. But he saw a firearm behind a computer at Mr. Daniels' residence. Those are the only instances where there is any evidence connecting Mr. Peoples to a gun in this case. See, my time has expired unless there are further questions.
Thank you. Mr. Paganini?
May it please the Court, my name is Scott Paganini and I represent the United States. Your Honors, the District Court did not clearly err in calculating the drug quantity attributable to the defendants. Specifically, the District Court did not clearly err in determining that the 700 grams of heroin per week distributed by the Daniels organization was attributed to all the defendants.
Now, that's a pretty high volume of drugs. Is it possible, looking at the defendants' analysis, that they could make a sale every 7 minutes, 15 hours a day, 7 days a week? And also, could you address the question of, is there any evidence in the record as to how many of these little packets, $10 packets, were sold on average per person?
Yes, Your Honor. It is possible. I think the evidence within the case is clear that this was a conspiracy that was moving a large amount of heroin, that there was a constant flow of customers. And the evidence, the way that the heroin was packaged was in called jabs. It was essentially 25 little baggies. I'm sorry?
I didn't hear your word. It was packaged in what?
They called them jabs. Yeah. That was the nickname they used, was jabs. It was essentially 2.5 grams or 25 baggies of a tenth gram of heroin. And some customers would purchase one. Some of them would purchase a jab at a time. It was constantly moving. The runners were constantly being refurbished, getting their supply replenished from the caretakers to obtain more jabs, and then they were going back to the locations waiting for calls from the dispatcher who was receiving calls from the customers and then selling those jabs. With regard to the amount...
What about the projecting these sales over a two-year period? Is there any evidence that the volume was the same in the first year of the conspiracy? When they started, presumably they sold a lower volume, right? Because the customers hadn't heard of them yet.
Your Honor, that isn't presumed. All the defendants in this case pled guilty to a time frame that preceded the September 2008 date, which would have been a year prior to when Hollis Daniels told Agent Ivanchuk.
You're saying it started before
Absolutely.
The two-year period of...
Absolutely, and I believe Paige, Daniel's girlfriend, and Mr. Gregory both testified or provided evidence that they obtained raw amounts of heroin, 50 to 100 grams twice a week, from Chicago prior to a year, the September 2008 date, that Hollis Daniels claimed he'd only been doing it for the prior year.
Yeah, because Daniels told the agent that the conspiracy only distributed the 700 grams per week during the last year of the conspiracy.
That's correct, Your Honor. But the district court, you know, when Agent Ivanchuk testified that, the district court found him credible and reliable and relied on his testimony, but also looked at the other evidence to determine that, one, that these defendants were pleading guilty to a time
what
frame.
What was the evidence for the preceding year, though?
That would have been Gregory and Page, Your Honor, that they were going to Chicago and receiving the raw heroin, 50 to 100 grams each time. That the evidence, because Page entered the conspiracy in May of 2008, Gregory entered it in, I believe it was June of 2007, and Gregory was a caretaker. He was one of the individuals that Hollis Daniels would take with him to Chicago. Paige was Daniels' girlfriend, was intimately aware and familiar with what was going on in the organization.
Well, Gregory said he obtained between 50 and 200 grams of raw heroin from Chicago in five separate trips. So if it was 50, could that equal the 700? I mean, just based on that calculation, would the numbers come out the same?
Well, the 50 was the raw amount, although,
right.
You know, I don't think anyone believes it was 100% raw. But the 700 was the amount that was provided by Daniels. And contrary to what the defendants are arguing, Mr. Daniels, if he was puffing at all, when the agents were asking him, you know, who's your supplier, that's what he was puffing about, how much raw heroin he could get. The agents were not concerned about how many times he was stretching or diluting the heroin.
But I was trying to get to what happened in the first year, because you said you relied on Gregory and Page for the first year when Daniel says the volume was not that great. And Gregory said it was between 50 and 200 grams of raw heroin from Chicago, five different trips. I'm saying, was it extrapolated on the 50 grams, you know, that you ultimately got?
I believe it was extrapolated based on 100 grams of raw heroin per week. So I think that what the judge looked at...
For the first year.
Yes, and I don't think there's any evidence that suggests that the amount differed in the first year, because as Hollis Daniels told Agent Ivanchuk, this was his recipe. This was his organization. He was stretching it seven times, and you know he was the one who came up with the idea with the drug phone, and he was the one who told Agent Ivanchuk he would obtain 100 grams of raw heroin. He only denied it at a sentencing hearing, which the judge found him not to be credible and found his testimony to be self-serving.
And Paige, who was the girlfriend, her proffer in terms of this 50 to 100 grams of raw heroin twice a week, she said that occurred for the first year as well.
I don't believe she was clear. What she said is, because she didn't come in until May of 2008,
mm-hmm.
although she was, I believe she was still his girlfriend, but I don't think her involvement in the conspiracy started until May of 2008. So from May of 2008 till the end of the conspiracy, I believe her testimony is that she would go twice a week and obtain that she would go twice a week and obtain 50 to 100 grams of raw heroin, which was then brought back to Rockford, brought to a stash house where it was cut or diluted with Dorman and over-the-counter sleep aid seven times, which again was Hollis Daniels' recipe.
Well, some of these issues that were raised about the quantity came when co-defendants were being sentenced, and the judge basically said he couldn't revisit the initial drug quantity calculation because he had to apply the same amount to each defendant. But can't the judge reconsider initial calculations in the face of new evidence or different arguments?
Yeah, I believe the judge could, Your Honor, but I think it was not error for the judge to to take the same record, the PSR in, with all the defendants was the same in terms of the background of the conspiracy, and the judge took the evidence from the subsequent sentencings and applied those. And the judge also listened and heard the arguments from the defendants, such as there was no large money seizures, there was no wholesale amount seizures, and he considered those. So I do believe...
And made specific findings on that, those new arguments?
He did, absolutely.
Not just the statement that he had relied on the $700 before.
No, Your Honor. And again, I think the judge, and Agent Ivanchus testified at subsequent hearings as well, and each time the judge determined that Agent Ivanchus' recollection and his testimony was credible and reliable. And as this Court has said numerous times, it's virtually never clear error for a judge's determination of credibility of a witness. And in addition, Your Honor, even if 700 grams only occurred for the second year of the conspiracy, that error would be harmless as to Townsend, Knox, Block, and Daniels. Because even if it was only for the previous year, those four individuals were part of the conspiracy. And at 700 grams a week over the course of 1 year, that's over 35,000 grams of heroin, which is 35 kilograms of heroin, which still gets you to the same base offense level. And as this Court said in Firth, an error in calculating relevant conduct that did not affect the defendant's base offense level was harmless. So the error as to those four individuals would be harmless. With regard to Smith, Smith is arguing for the same base offense level. So his error would also be harmless. And with regard to Cobb and Knox...
Well, why did Smith not get a gun enhancement?
I believe, Your Honor, because the evidence was not foreseeable to Smith. The evidence that was presented to the court was...
What knowledge did he lack that Peoples had?
I do not know, Your Honor. I do know that with regard to Peoples, the testimony and the evidence was is that he was familiar because he was close with Hollis Daniels. He was at his house where he saw Hollis Daniels' AK-47. He was also familiar with Clay, who was also a defendant who carried a firearm. And I don't think there's any evidence to suggest that any of these individuals had other jobs. These people were runners. They were operating 7 days a week. There was three to four of them at a time. They were running eight-hour shifts, so essentially there were six to eight runners in a given day that were operating at different shifts.
Is that the only evidence of people seeing weapons, those two instances?
Besides his history, the prior criminal record where he used a firearm, the primary evidence would be that he saw the rifle at Hollis Daniels' house, that he knew Clay possessed it, and then the testimony of Page that there was always firearms present when they were mixing the heroin, and that Hollis Daniels, his testimony that he would provide firearms to anyone that wanted one for protection.
But the rifle was not at the place that the drugs were being cut or packaged.
That's correct. However, you know, there's, I don't think the evidence suggests that there was no, there's nothing done in furtherance of the conspiracy at Daniels' house. I mean, this is a place where they would go, money possibly was stored. So the cutting occurred at separate houses, and it was moved around.
So what was the exact evidence as to his residence that was related? You said possibly money was stored. What was the exact evidence relating it to the drug trade? His house, Daniels' house.
Your Honor, I would guess I'd have to apologize because it's actually based on a trial that has subsequently happened, so it's not on this record.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
It's actually based on a trial that I was part of with another defendant that just went to trial as part of this conspiracy, so it's not part of this record.
Mm-hmm. So there's nothing in the record to tie the house of Daniels to the drugs, and that was one incident you were relying on.
Other
than his prior conviction when the
correct.
Gun situation.
Not that I know of, no, Your Honor.
Right. And then so then we're down to his prior conviction and what the girlfriend testified to.
And the fact that he knew Clay, who was also a runner, was possessing firearms during the course of the conspiracy.
But he was never at the place drugs were being cut. There was no evidence of that.
No, but Clay was a runner, so he would have been the person that was on the streets selling the heroin. So right. I think it's foreseeable that Peoples that Clay was possessing the firearm in furtherance of his role as a runner.
And then, but Clay, was there any evidence that people saw Clay with the gun?
Yes.
And what was that, remind me?
It was a situation that the counsel brought up where when he got into the car, he knew Clay was carrying a firearm.
That's right.
And then
the
he subsequently
incident.
Left the conspiracy because he didn't want to be part of the guns, but then he subsequently came back into the conspiracy a short time later.
Thank you.
Yes. And with regard to Cobb and Knox, the error would be harmless because the court didn't even consider the crack cocaine that was attributed to these individuals. And with regard to Daniels and Block, the error would also there would be a harmless error because they're both looking at guideline ranges of 360 to life. And as this court said in Anderson, the guideline range would be the same. The court could impose the same sentence. I mean, although in Anderson, the judge did state on the record that he would have given the same sentence as well. Judge Coppola did not say on the record here that I would give the same sentence regardless. But also looking at 3553A4, one of the factors that the judge is to look at in determining a sentence is the sentencing range determined by the commission, not the offense level. So essentially, the range would be the same in this case, and the statutory factor or the recommended punishment, the balance that the judge would have to do, would be unaltered. Unless there was any further questions, Your Honor, I would just ask that this court affirm the district court sentence for all eight defendants.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Paganini. So defendant's lawyer's time had run out, but you can each have a minute if you have anything further.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just wanted to mention that the record was not the same in all of these cases. In fact, most of the evidence wasn't in the pre-sentence report. It came in the hearings. So Daniel's hearing was Daniel's statements and whatever else he tried to say. And in the later hearings, in Block's hearing, it was argument in the next person's argument. It was evidence by the agent. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGowan. Mr. Hobbit?
Are there any further questions? I apologize if I cut off mid-sentence last time I was up. To answer Judge Posner's question about why there should not be waiver, I think this court has found that there are times where, in retrospect, appellant's counsel and the appeals court look back on comments made by a district court defense attorney and, in retrospect, say, how could he not have objected? Why not? What was he thinking? And this court has found that equitably, it's best to give the defendant a little bit of leniency and the benefit of the doubt.
That sounds more like an ineffective assistance issue.
Perhaps, Your Honor, but it wasn't raised this way by Mr. Omar or the other defendant's attorneys on appeal.
It's not too late, right?
And there was nothing strategically to be gained, as discussed in Jaime, by not raising the objection. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mowat. Mr. Sullivan?
Judges, a long time ago, sitting in Judge Will's courtroom, I learned sometimes if you think you're doing okay, sit down and shut up. but in violating that rule, let me just say, with respect to the gun that Mr. Clay had, it isn't just a question of gun possession by a conspirator. It's got to be in furtherance of the conspiracy. The only evidence that is in the record is that Clay possessed a gun threatening his girlfriend. That's how he got arrested. The AK-47 is in a house, as far as the evidence showed that I saw in the record, unrelated to where the drugs were mixed or kept. Daniels kept his house separate from where his major drug activities took place. And then I believe there's another one where a guy, about the time Peoples gets arrested or a couple weeks earlier, is arrested near a school with a gun. He's picking up his girlfriend's kids or something. But no indication that these matters were in furtherance of the drug conspiracy. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Sullivan. And you were all appointed, were you not? So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your clients.